Hare Krishna. All the way from St. Louis, huh? Well, for the benefit of those that are just joining us this weekend, this Christmas holiday weekend, I wanted to speak on a theme, so I chose as a theme the Pada Padma of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of the Lord. One of the questions that were raised by the sages of Naimisharanya, the final of the six questions was, now that Krishna has departed from this earth, let his principles to find their shelter. Because when Krishna was present, merely by the touch of his lotus feet upon this earth, everything auspicious was manifested. And by his power and spiritual influence, all inauspiciousness was driven away. And everything was flourishing, much like Queen Kunti was describing, how by Krishna being present, in the assembly of the Pandavas, everything auspicious was made possible. So the sages were asking, now that Krishna has gone, is the ring back? Can you take that out? Whatever was better before. Now that Krishna has left, this means Kali Yuga has begun, Dwarapa Yuga has concluded, Krishna has completed his pastimes. Where are religious principles to find their shelter? And the answer given by Sutta Goswami is, shortly after the departure of Lord Krishna, just like the setting of the sun in the west, on the eastern horizon the full moon has appeared. As brilliant form of the personality of Godhead, which is to provide shelter for everyone. Throughout this age of Kali, Krishna was present just for some number of years. Of course, his glories continue after him and even preceded him. But the storehouse of those glories are found in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, this holiday weekend's meditation is on the lotus feet of that literary form of the personality of Godhead in the second canto. The first chapter is just a short summary, because we've already covered some of this. It's Shukadev Goswami's response to Maharaj Parikshit's question, how am I, as the king, or anyone who are my subjects, to prepare themselves for the inevitable separation of the soul from the body? One can do that, one should do that at present, because right now the unnatural circumstance is the soul is implicated in this material covering through the agency of false ego. We've identified with the material covering. We think of ourselves in terms of both the gross and equally as difficult and implicating is the gross form, or the subtle form, of identification with the mind. Our dear friend, the mind. Our dearmost companion that actually we think we are. All the thoughts and the feelings and the hankerings and lamentations that we know so well within the mind. And our dear intelligence that helps us fulfill all those desires as best as our meager intelligence can do to satisfy the dictates of the senses. And that's our sum and substance reality or illusion. So the Bhagavatam teaches here, that Shukadeva Goswami is teaching, that one should not fall into that default position, the failure to inquire into the ultimate good of the living entity. So he answers Maharaj Pariksit's question by giving an essence of what it is that one should hear about, chant about, remember and glorify and worship. That's Krishna. One should fix one's consciousness upon Krishna. And by whatever the means, by knowledge, by meditation, by elevating pious activity, the ultimate fruit of that is the remembrance of the personality of Godhead always during one's life and at the conclusion, fixing one's consciousness upon the Supreme Ante Narayana Smriti. So that we discussed yesterday evening. Then this morning we discussed that Shukadeva Goswami was pointing to the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is fully transcendental, and he gives his proof. Same as Sutta Goswami gives his proof. He gives the same proof. And that is that fully liberated souls, Shukadeva Goswami points to his own case, that I was certainly situated perfectly in transcendence, not only in knowledge, but he was not feeling the attraction and repulsion of sense objects. He was not only in knowledge, but perfectly realized in the Brahman conception or spiritual conception of life. And meaning he had no attraction for anything within the modes of nature, anything temporary, and was and placed himself under the care of Vyas, his father, to study this Srimad Bhagavatam, to hear it and then present it to others. So this is our proof. It's transcendental because the transcendentalist was attracted to it, who's not one who's not attracted to anything ordinary. And we ended this morning, we'll just continue now. We're all the way to text 10, chapter 1, where Shukadeva Goswami is now detailing the question, the process. The question is, what's the process? By what means? Abhideya again, he's inquiring about, what is the means that I should take up? What is the thing that I should take up so that I can prepare myself? So, inquiry into Atma-Tattva. What is the distinction between spirit and matter? How to become fully situated in the realm of spirit? Shukadeva Goswami says, I am going to narrate this Srimad Bhagavatam from beginning to end, not just the 10th canto. From beginning to end. so that, and I'm going to narrate it to you because you are a most sincere devotee. And we're trying to be sincere devotees, so we fall in that category. We're not of the stature of Shukadeva Goswami, but our eligibility is there to the degree that sincerely we would like to have to be established in our relationship with the Supreme Lord. That's all. We would like to be established in that relationship with the Supreme Lord. There may be obstacles, that's okay. There may be shortcomings on my side, that's okay. I want to be established in that relationship with the Supreme Lord. I very sincerely want that. Shraddhadatam, in the Sanskrit of the verse, Shraddhadatam, and sincere aspiration for that goal. And Prabhupada explains it. We didn't discuss this morning, so this is not review, this is new discussion. He paraphrases the definition of faith, because the outcome of what he says in the verse is one who has that sincere desire and hears with great respect and great attention. So one can hear with great attention with the wish to disprove it. The Archbishop of the Russian Orthodox Church wrote a 5-page letter to the mayor of the city of Moscow with great attention. He has read Bhagavad Gita, and he quotes from Bhagavad Gita. What kind of a horrible person these Hare Krishna people are worshipping? He quotes from the universal form in a letter to the mayor. Why the mayor should tear down that building and force the Hare Krishna people to become urchins on the street. You think that they're wonderful because they feed so many people with their wholesome vegetarian food, and they are all so joyful, and they sing and praise God's names and give out their, use some adjective, I forget what it is, what he called prasadam was something nasty, offensive. But who is this person that they're worshiping? I'll show you who that person is. He quotes from Bhagavad Gita. The universal form. This is the God of these Krishna people. And what's more, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah. So, attentiveness is one thing, and respect is another thing. And one can be respectful and also be not so attentive. So he indicates both. Very respectfully and very attentively. Hear the subject matter. To Prabhupada embeds this message, to hear the subject matter attentively and respectfully, one then must also offer that same attentiveness and respectfulness to the speaker. That's Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. So it's a combination of a perfect speaker, and he's now identifying the qualifications of the qualified listener, such that transcendental knowledge is imparted. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshana. A tattvadarshi can awaken knowledge within the heart of others. If the Tattvadarshi is qualified and the audience is qualified, then transcendental knowledge manifests. Prabhupada explains this in the purport. Before the devotee, it's not an intellectual event, it's not dependent upon the researching capacity, what someone's IQ, what someone's degree of higher study, MA, PhD. If it was so, all MAs, PhDs would be great devotees. We don't find that, do we? Some of the greatest asuras are super intellectuals. Reading, because there wasn't another translation available, Gopi Pranadana, our Sanskrit teacher in Govardhan Hill, he now has 30 students studying full-time Sanskrit in Govardhan with a budget to work with to take care of the students and their prasadam and everything. He was teaching Tattva Sandarbha one time in Vrindavan for a month, and there wasn't another translation available, so there was, I'm not even going to mention the name because somebody might go to find the guy's translation, but so-and-so did a translation of Tattva Sandarbha for his PhD study work at University of Pennsylvania. He got his PhD. Besides translating Jiva Goswami's writings, he translated the commentary of Baladev Vidyabhusan of Tattva Sandarbha. And with Gopi Pranadatta's guidance and assistance, I studied it. And according to Gopi, the work that he did, the Sanskrit work that he did, was impeccable. I mean, there was strong fidelity between what his Sanskrit skills were good. But then, with the degree of honesty that he had, he would then make a little footnote that this is my own opinion of what Baladev Vidyabhusan says, and then he would do his rah, rah, rah thing. And when he finished his PhD, he left the University of Pennsylvania, he went to Sringari Math, and he took Sannyasa Shankara Sampradaya. After very meticulously reading Jiva Goswami's explanation of Tattva Sandarbha, rendering of why one should approach the Personality of Godhead through the medium of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's Prameya, Pramana and Prameya Kanda portion, just summary at the beginning, Tattva Sandarbha. So that's one example of stunning example of scholarship is not sufficient. So those of you that feel sometimes when reading Prabhupada's books, one devotee was describing when reading Bhagavad Gita, I don't get it. You know, I can recite the verses and explain the things, but you know, on a deeper level I don't get it. But it's not a matter of intellectual skill, nor is it a matter of rote recitation. Children can recite Bhagavad Gita, but you know, that doesn't mean that's nice. That doesn't mean that it's purifying, but doesn't mean that they've understood how to apply it. So, and precisely what the message is either. So how does transcendental knowledge become transmitted? That's what he's describing here. The process of submissive oral reception with great attention and great respect. Then the consequence of that is that faith in the Personality of Godhead and the confidence that one can achieve Him in the state of liberation, just like the liberated soul who's describing him, Shukadeva Goswami, becomes instilled. So here's how Prabhupada described. It's very nice. Shraddha Shabde Vishvas Kahesu Dridha Nishchaya Sarva Karma. The benefit of all auspicious things, and there's so many things that we may want, but faith is that if I can achieve one thing, all those other beneficial things will come. The classic is the person who wants enjoyment, sense enjoyment, their objective is money. Money, 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 money. Because if I get money, then I can get things. And if I get things, then I can enjoy. So just get money. By hook or by crook, money's the honey. Go for it. And their whole life is geared around that one thing. Or somebody else has another objective. They want power. Or they want position. Or they want to win the athletic competition, certain thing or something. And so everything is geared around that one thing. So people that have faith, it's one thing will accomplish other desirable things, and for as far as spiritual life is concerned, if one has faith that if I can achieve the lotus feet of Krishna, I don't need to spread myself out with so many, 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 many other things. Whatever other things are, let me achieve that one thing. And if I can achieve that one thing, all other desirable things will be achieved. So, how does one get this shraddha-tattvam, shraddha-tattam? It's from Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada is going to explain the connection between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Within Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that he's the source of everything. And if one can understand that, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, Matak Sarvam Pravartate, Iti Madva, Bhajante Mam, Buddha Bhava Samandita, knowledge, transcendental experience that will follow. Desirable things will follow if I can accomplish this one thing. Be fixed in devotion to the Personality of Godhead. So Bhagavad Gita gives us this not just information, but the transcendental knowledge. If we approach Bhagavad Gita properly, it's not just information. It's awakening of transcendental knowledge that Krishna is the source of everything, thus knowing there is some faith if I can just reach Krishna's lotus feet. So then that opens the door for one to approach Srimad Bhagavatam. In sequence, Bhagavad Gita and then Srimad Bhagavatam. Doesn't mean we can't read Srimad Bhagavatam until we've totally assimilated Bhagavad Gita. But there is a sequence, nonetheless. And when hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from the right source, in the right temperament, this way of, as we were discussing this morning, the process of approaching transcendental knowledge is this process, then one can become fixed, not only in devotional service, but fixed upon the object of devotional service. Who is Krishna? Srimad Bhagavatam discloses. What are the glories of Krishna? And as one understands the glory, how merciful is Krishna, how great is Krishna, how powerful is Krishna, how beautiful is Krishna, how loving is Krishna, it's impetus to go to Krishna. More impetus to go to Krishna. And starting with Krishna's lotus feet, which is these first two cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, the lotus feet of the literary form of the Lord. So to hear those topics again and again, it's massaging the lotus feet of Krishna. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami makes a metaphor. He says that just like when you rub sandalwood, some of you for your worship of your deity may make chandan. You rub sandalwood and they made 25 buckets full of sandalwood for the installation of Shushi Panchatattva. And that whole area where they were, they said, anybody can serve the deities, doesn't matter who you are. Here's a sandalwood paste, here's a pestle, and a bucket. Just rub to your heart's content. And the whole area smelled so fragrant. So just Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes, as by rubbing sandalwood, the fragrance becomes more and more strong and aromatic. So also by approaching the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord in the form of these first and second cantos and discussing the subject again and again, it's not boring and repetitious, it's more and fragrant and more aromatic and more sweet. One can go more deeply into the meaning of the message that Vyasadeva wants us to have, how to reach those sweet lotus feet. Assisted by our understanding of Bhagavad Gita, hearing with great respect and great attention the message of Srimad Bhagavatam again and again, one is sure to achieve perfection of life. And in between, it's very joyful. Prabhupada quotes that in Padma Purana, Gautama Rishi recommends to Maharaj Ambarish that he should read Srimad Bhagavatam, that he should hear Srimad Bhagavatam as it was told by Shukadeva Goswami. And in this way he would achieve spiritual perfection. Of course, Maharaj Ambarish was, he's in this topmost position anyways. What does he need to attain? Just like Shukadeva Goswami, what does he need to attain? It's not, you know, go from a struggling position to a position of relief from that struggle. That's where we are. But for Maharaj Ambarish, he was not only a great devotee, specifically he was a Krishna Bhakta. When he was, from the ninth canto, we know that when he was doing his very, very special vrata, the one that Durvasa Muni came at the very end, where there was supposed to be a breaking of the fast, that morning, he had worshipped his Krishna deity. And what he broke the fast with was the Charanamrita from his Krishna deity. He was a Krishna Bhakta. Gautama Rishi advised, you should hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And in this way, spiritual perfection will be yours. So, our austerities, unlike Dhruva Maharaj of eating next to nothing and standing on one leg and controlling our breathing every 15 days, and while chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, ours is chanting, dancing, Krishna Prasad, and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate. So it's whatever inconvenience there is living in Chicago, sometimes it's bitter cold, sometimes it's raining, every now and then it's nice weather. The austerities of the Himalayas in Chicago. And the traffic jams and Christmas shopping and so forth. The opportunity to associate with devotees of the Lord, chant the holy name together. We're very fortunate we have our kirtaniers that really, really like chanting. We can chant along with them wonderful, charming melodies. Anyway, our process is joyful, is the point. The austerity is just to set aside all those things that cause us disturbance anyways and come in here and chant. And then this message of Srimad Bhagavatam, the two go together. The means of purification is the chanting of the holy name. That's coming up in just a moment. But then the directions of how to conduct our lives and to focus our attention more and more upon the glories of the Lord. There's a sequence to all of this. This is very, very valuable. Just to be specific about it. It's the next verse. That's as far as we're going to go. It's just one more verse. But this next verse is very, very wonderful. Etan nirvidyamananam icchitam akato bhayam yoginam nirpandir nitam harir namanu kirtanam. Listening to a morning walk conversation, and Prabhupada was mulling, he was describing this, just going over the verses, the phrase. It was in Los Angeles, in Venice Beach. The next day it was Prahlad Maharaj. Batir Nakrishna Paratak Svatova. But one morning was this one. Etan Nirvidyamana Nam Ichitam Akkuto Bayam. And just relishing the words and the meaning of the words and saying them again and expanding the meaning, the application of them. It's a very important and very powerful verse. Nice one to meditate upon. Here's the translation. It's an essence message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the summaries of this first chapter, this is it. This verse has, it's the importance of chanting the holy name, uttered directly in Srimad Bhagavatam. Now other Puranas and other scriptures also glorify the chanting of the holy name. So accompanying the Srimad Bhagavatam is specifically the names of the Lord. And through the agency of the names of the Lord, one can successively become realized in the form of the Lord and the qualities of the Lord and the pastimes of the Lord. Actually experience these things, actually enter into these things in this life by transcendental realization as exhibited by our Goswamis. At least the door is open for any one of us to go there. If we follow these very simple little indications with great sincerity and faith. So here's the translation. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord, after the ways of the great authorities, is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, akama, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, sarvakama, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge, moksha kama. This is a corollary with that verse. Tivrena bhakti yogena. But specifically, the tivra bhakti begins with this process of hearing and chanting. Hearing and chanting. It's a phrase that we use in ISKCON vernacular all the time. It's hearing and chanting. But it's the Bhagavat Dharma process, Shravanam Kirtanam. Shrotavya Kirtitavyascha, Smartavya Chechatobhayam. It takes one beyond the fearful condition of material life. I'll just refer back a little anecdote. In this last Friday at the Harvard Divinity School, I was invited as a panelist for previewing a film, and one of the questions, there were 21 questions asked of different spiritual leaders. Deepak Chopra, by the way, was also interviewed. He has good stage presence, Deepak Chopra. He had some good answers compared to some of the other things people said. But one of the questions was, Why is there such violent conflagration in the world today? That the topic was oneness. And many of the Bhaktivedanta Swami was also interviewed on that. Documentary. Many of the persons said because people feel challenged, they're out of touch with their own spiritual condition, and so they feel fear that another person's ideology or another person's culture may encroach upon theirs. So out of fear, they strike or they act in a reactive manner. Fear was a word that kept surfacing again and again. So this abhaya, just as Srila Prabhupada's name given from birth and reaffirmed when he was initiated, abhay, and abhay charan. And that's what our A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami is. Abhay Charan. His initiated name given by Bhakti Siddhanta. One can become fearless if you're in a place of safety and you know it. He who is the supreme source of everything is my shelter and he is my protector. And one can then feel fearless. Whatever feature of duality may come marching in the door, it doesn't matter, because that shelter and he who is the source of everything, whatever's happening, he's the controller, he's the sanctioner, he's the protector, he's the well-wisher, he's my dearmost friend. And not just reciting the verse. Suradam sarvabhutanam. But absorbed in that consciousness. It's the doubtless and fearless, the chanting of the holy name, confirmed by our Srimad Bhagavatam and Vyas and Shukadeva Goswami and all the acharyas who have commented like this, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Prabhupada quotes Padma Purana in the same way. All of our sattvic scriptures and their authorities of them make this emphasis upon the chanting of the holy name. And it's the constant chanting of the holy name, or in the purport Prabhupada addresses the offenseless chanting of the holy name. And who is eligible? The whole range of possibilities. Those that have all material desires. Those that have no material desires. Those that aspire for liberation. And anything in between. Take your pick. The eligibility is sincerity. Not disposition or where you are on your trajectory of your spiritual path. That's not a criteria. How many degrees you have, how old you are, what country you're born. There's of no material qualification required. The qualification is a sincere desire. And taking shelter of this wonderful message. And then a little small defining component here is do so offenselessly. Ooh. I knew there was a catch. Okay, what are the offenses? So, Prabhupada, let me just read how Prabhupada describes this. When reading the Bhagavatam, there are several things to do that make it like you sit right on the edge of your seat to hear with great attention. Prabhupada's mission was he was given the order by his spiritual master to deliver the message of Lord Chaitanya to the English-speaking world. He knew that it was not just Bhaktisiddhanta's wish. It was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wish. It was the wish, it was the mandate of Lord Chaitanya. And he was given that, he took it in a very personal way. So he's preparing the message to bring that transcendental love of God into the world. And he was empowered to do it. And read those words that Prabhupada is speaking to you, to take you, take us, take me to that position. And being gifted with the potency to do that, hear his words and grab hold of that message. Just like the classic Vedic metaphor of someone who's in the bottom of a well and you're calling out, help! Help! And who's going to hear you? But somebody comes to the top of the well, help, help, help! And they lower down a rope. And all that they're saying is just grab a hold of the rope. That's all you have to, you don't even have to climb the rope. Just grab hold of the rope. I'll pull you out. Just grab hold of the rope. So these instructions, these messages, that's the rope. The instructions of, he's using the context of Shukadev Goswami, but actually it's him as a representative of Shukadev Goswami by the transcendental description of, here's how you apply this message in your life today. Here it is. So just listen with that kind of attentiveness and gratefulness and respect and see what happens. By offenseless chanting and hearing of the holy name of the Lord, one becomes acquainted with the transcendental form of the Lord. Become acquainted with. Just chant the holy name. One becomes acquainted with the transcendental form of the Lord, and then with the attributes of the Lord, and then with the transcendental nature of his pastimes, etc. Here it is mentioned that one should constantly chant the holy name of the Lord after hearing it from authorities. This means, in case you didn't catch it, hearing from the authorities is the first essential. Hearing of the holy name, then he goes back over it again. Gradually promotes one to the stage of hearing about his form, hearing about his attributes, his pastimes, and so on, and thus the necessity of chanting his glories develops successively. Now, just a case in point about the value of hearing properly in disciplic succession. I was visited in a temple the other evening by someone who was saying, I heard this, my wife heard this description that when you chant, you should think of these specific pastimes from these specific parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, and you should do that while you're chanting the holy name. But I couldn't find that anywhere in Prabhupada's books. Is that something that we should do? I said, thank you for asking, and let me read to you what is in Prabhupada's books. Or I can read to you what's in the Namacharya Haridas Thakur, what he says about the chanting of the holy name. The chanting of the holy name, when chanting, there's one thing that your consciousness should be drawn to or directed to, and that is the sound of the holy name. And that within the holy name, all of that is available. You go the other direction and you miss the yajna for Kali Yuga, the Yuga Dharma. So, how to apply this, has its right here. Then so constantly, at least satatam kirtayanto mam, or on a regular basis, shrinvata sukata krishna punya shravana kirtana, one should regularly hear, daily chant some, if you can't do it all day long, daily chant some fixed, daily hear from the scriptures something fixed and daily, and as a regular daily function with great reverence and attention. And it cleanses, and it cleanses, and it cleanses, and it starts to go deep into that cleansed heart. And it's not armchair, it's real, it's the real thing. It's not the armchair philosopher, Prabhupada, you know, someone who strokes upon their beard and smokes their pipe and thinks, maybe it's like this. Not in that manner. But the direct experience of purification. He then, in case there's, because sometimes this question arises, it was buzzing around ISKCON a few years back. Is it right that we're supposed to chant out loud? Somebody was raising the doubt because they were hearing from something outside. Are we supposed to chant out loud because this is a mantra and mantras are sacred and mantras are supposed to be uttered silently, and so they were going around, you know, professing that you should chant silently. Besides, it's much more difficult to chant silently, but if that's what we're supposed to do, we should do it. Is it what we're supposed to do? Srila Jiva Goswami instructs that chanting of the holy name should be loudly done. And it's that same question was asked of Haridas Thakur. Jiva Goswami is not just pulling something out of the air, it's the authority of Haridas Thakur. Chanting should be done loudly. In fact, it's more beneficial for the chanter to chant loud. Besides, it's easier to chant aloud than silently in your mind. It's more beneficial to chant loudly. Besides, it helps to capture the mind. More importantly, it's pleasing to Krishna more if other living entities can hear the holy name. And pleasing Krishna is our ticket to becoming successful in spiritual life. And how do we know what's pleasing to Krishna? Through those who represent Krishna, the scripture, and those who are guiding us on the path of spiritual life in disciplic succession. And then it should be performed defenselessly. So he refers to the same thing is said in Padma Purana, and then in Padma Purana it identifies the 10 offenses. And then Prabhupada spends the next 2 pages discussing the 10 offenses, and I'm only going to address, there's 3 of them. One of them, because Prabhupada speaks of them in a unique way, I'll just read it. What's the second offense in the chanting of the holy name? Right. Different sequences. One should not consider the chanting of the holy name and that of the demigods to be on an equal level, that are equal to or independent of the holy name of Krishna. So here's how Prabhupada addresses this one. One should not see the holy names of the Lord in terms of worldly distinction. This is an unusual rendering, so just be prepared for it. The Lord is the proprietor of all the universes, and therefore he may be known in different places by different names, but that does not in any way qualify the fullness of the Lord. Any nomenclature which is meant for the Supreme Lord is as holy as the others because they are all meant for the Lord. Such holy names are as powerful as the Lord, and there is no bar for anyone in any part of the creation to chant and glorify the Lord by the particular name of the Lord as it is locally understood. They are all auspicious and one should not distinguish such names of the Lord as material commodities. That's a very different rendering of that offense. While writing this in his second canto purport, Prabhupada also writes that of all the names of the Lord, this name Krishna is all attractive. In fact, Krishna's name means all attractive. So if one does not have another name, this is a nice name. Krishna, and therefore the Hare Krishna mantra is, it should not be considered with material distinction. And that which is subject to material distinction should not be considered equal to the name of the Lord. That's the idea. Then, in reference to the seventh offense against the chanting of the holy name, continuing to commit sinful activities, thinking it's okay because I chant the holy name and that's going to take away the reaction for those sinful activities. So, therefore, the one who's chanting the holy name has to be vigilant to strive, at least, to become free from those activities which are sinful or deviate from the instructions of Scripture. One should not relax or become complacent in the matter of proper theistic conduct. There is a group of people out there, I won't identify where, but there's several of them actually, that boldly speak of chanting the holy name of Krishna without any rules and regulations. They introduce to the most unwholesome people raganuga sadhana bhakti, spontaneous devotional service. We're without rules. So one of our ISKCON devotees attended one of those things and said, you know, this woman sannyasi was giving the talk, and he raised his hand and said, so I have a question. Is it okay if one comes here and regularly is drinking alcohol and smoking cigarettes and having illicit sex and eating meat? Is that okay? And just, you know, do what you do and do all those things at the same time? Is that what we're to understand? She became very flustered and didn't answer his question and went in another direction. This is a, you know, formidable institution with big property and da-da-da-da-da. So one has to be very careful with this offense. Prabhupada writes, such an offender cannot purify himself by any recommended method of purification. When you become an offender to the holy name, that's the end. Because the chanting of the holy name can free one from all the reactions of any other, even seva aparad and any other kind of aparad, any kind of mistake or imperfection in life. But you offend the holy name in this way, and nothing can purify you. So that's please be very attentive in this regard. And the tenth offense is to become uninterested in the holy name of the Lord, even after hearing of the transcendental nature of the holy name. Now listen to this nice explanation. The effect of chanting the holy name of the Lord is perceived by the chanter as liberation from the conception of false egoism. Haribo. When or when will that day be mine? Liberation from the conception of false egoism. Dissolve it. And how is false ego exhibited? By thinking oneself to be the enjoyer of the world and thinking everything in the world to be meant for my enjoyment. So I and mine consciousness is dissolved simply from the chanting of the holy name. As long as we don't hold on to the attachments of trying to be the enjoyer. So if you strive like that, take shelter of the holy name in that disposition, then the holy name will dissolve false ego. And when false ego is, it's the first element to appear in creation, and it's the last one to let go. Most subtle. And then even the modes of nature do not affect, because the modes of nature are connected to the soul through the false ego. The material mind will dissolve, the material intelligence, specifically the intelligence to make arrangements for sense gratification, it just dissipates. And spiritual intelligence takes precedence. How to reach Krishna? How to use this situation of life to reach Krishna? How to take this place, that whatever the circumstance, the time, the place, the people, the conditions, how it can be useful to reach Krishna takes over if we chant the holy name without offense or strive to come to that position. So therefore, it's the doubtless and fearless way of success. So this is a little bit of the theology of the holy name found right here at the lotus feet of the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll continue this evening. See if there's any comments or discussion on this.
How does one check if I'm developing the taste for the holy name?
How does one develop test? What's the litmus test for taste for the holy name? You want a short answer or a long one?
Long one.
I shouldn't have asked that. Mahanidhi has written a very nice book called The Art of Chanting the Holy Name, and you can read that book. That's the long one. Something I like from the Srimad Bhagavatam is what Lord Kapila Dev says to Devahuti, that the test of taste is effort is no longer required. The mind just goes to Krishna. When the sound of Krishna's name is there, the mind spontaneously is drawn. Prior to that, there's, in the mode of goodness, one wants purification. So one makes effort to bring the mind to the holy name. And that's on this side. And on that side, there's effort is not required. There's a taste. Just like when you're thirsty. Your body is telling you, water. It's not like you have to, you know, have to, okay, I got to drink some water because it's healthy to drink some water. Taste. And the flip side is the lack of interest in so many mundane things that may previously have been making up one's life. You know, in the workplace, people talk about stuff. And, you know, just not interested in that stuff. But with the mind becomes drawn to some of the stuff that's otherwise not interesting, then that's a deterrent for taste. If I may, I'll get a little explicit. In some of the cases with persons who are sadhakas, practicing devotional service, and trying to go further along the path of devotion, you know, you start to scrutinize how their day is broken up, and you know the blocks of time and how much time they spend for different things. And one of the things that will disappear that shows at least a strong desire for purification and maybe the stage of developing taste is television, and specifically then, you know, I only turn it on to watch the news. And, you know, I do it when I'm eating, because I don't want to waste time. I want to, you know. And then I chant after I finish my rounds, after I watch the news. Then, yeah. So, and there are ways to wean off of that, but, you know, rather than just saying, okay, throw the TV out. But there's some indication that the mind is attracted to stuff. And everybody here, I'm sure, knows what their variety of stuff is. Something that's just a time waster or a mind pollutant that keeps one from taste for the holy name. So that's a sign that taste isn't there yet. The one who wants to develop a taste will be looking for those things that are nothing but distractions or nothing but bad habits. It's not necessarily like a awful, yucky bad habit, something grossly sinful, but just something that's habitual time waster. A lot of people that work in offices, software people, it's, you know, cruising on the internet. Just time-wasting, mind-dulling stuff. Do something else with your mind. If you have some time to burn, you know, read a sloka. Recite one of your favorite phrases or prayers. Absorb your mind in something elevating. And when one is drawn to those things instead of the time-wasters, that's a sign that there's taste. As I mentioned, it's, you know, becoming a little bit repetitive, but it's good to repeat a theme. Build an environment around your life such that the message will fructify, fertilize the soil, make an atmosphere in which you lead your life conducive for the message to go more deeply, more deeply, more deeply. Live in a life in the quality of goodness. Here's a real simple one. Prabhupada described that a brahmana, before a brahmana will begin their work, they'll make the place clean. It's just a sign of a brahmana. And they leave the place more clean than when they got there. So make the atmosphere in your workplace, in your office, or in your home, or wherever it is that you spend time, as a habit, like, you know, a principle that you live by. Keep things very clean. And don't just, like married family people, don't just leave it up to the wife to make the place clean. Yeah, right. From the lady's side. It's a principle of life. Be clean. Just because, you know, it's conducive. It's the right atmosphere for spiritual activity and for the quality of goodness, even if it's work. You know, your career work, academic work, whatever it is. Clean. So, absence of taste is You know, there's clutter everywhere. It's just a symptom. It's a simple principle. But, you know, very quickly one can understand certain things about oneself by little litmus tests, like you're asking. So the frame of your life is goodness, and things that don't, that's not conducive to goodness and elevation and purification, you eliminate them. And one who is practiced like that is eligible for taste, and one who is situated in taste is always like that. Harisori described, just on this cleanliness point, Prabhupada's standards of cleanliness were impeccable. Impeccable. He didn't go down the path of what some of the details were, but you know, he would not allow people in his presence, to his disciples, to have unclean habits. If he had unclean habits, he would correct them. And he would expect that, Harisori described, after correcting their unclean habits, he would expect that he would be gentle first time. And if they didn't correct it, he would let them have it the second time. And he just was very not tolerant, you know, intolerant of continued bad cleanliness habits. Now, it's not, he was a, you know, a, whatever the word is, phobia or something. Cleanliness phobia person. The germ phobia or whatever it is. It was just his quality. And what's inside comes outside. So, being very conscientious about how we keep ourselves externally has certainly bearing on how conscientious we are about what's inside. I mean, it's not one automatically takes care of the other and you don't have to worry about, but it's some indication. Okay, enough on that one. Any other question? Anyone? So we'll go on to Yogi and Nirantra. Oh, there you are. Little Kirtan, right? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Ki Sri Gaur Nithai ki jai. Ko Premanandi. Ki jai. Ki Gaur Nithai ki jai.